Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, we'll have a conversation about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as our meal at a Houston restaurant you may want to try. To do that, I am joined by my co-host this week. She is the owner of Heights Grocer and Montrose Grocer. Mary Clarkson, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm great, Eric. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for doing this. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Texas Monthly included four Houston restaurants on its list of Texas's best new restaurants for 2026. In alphabetical order, they are Agnes and Sherman, D and Pho, Latuli, and Zaranda. Agnes and Sherman, it's not a ranked list, according to Texas Monthly, but they did recognize Agnes and Sherman as Restaurant of the Year, meaning it is number one. Mary, I'm just going to throw it to you. How do you think Texas Monthly did? Are these the four best restaurants that opened in Houston in the last 12 months or so?
Oh, boy. Loaded question.
Well, yes, that's what we do here.
I know.
And you love answering these questions.
What are you talking about? I know. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, when are you afraid of a controversial opinion?
Hey, very fair. Agnes and Sherman, I super agree with. I'm excited about that. I think a lot of times, before I dive into the other restaurants, I'm not saying any of these are or are not deserving. I just think sometimes some restaurants can afford to have a PR machine and a publicist and all of that. So they're able to get the attention of these Texas Monthly writers easier than some smaller restaurants sometimes. Also, sometimes chefs, operators have relationships with these writers and they can, you know, get their attention on their own as well. So I don't think you have to have a publicist. I just think, you know, this is the world and the game we play and
right,
the hospitality
right. If we're looking at it, Agnes and Sherman has like a part-time like internal person that they've used to basically field like media queries and send out.
But also their chef and their owner, like, you know, they're well-known and have relationships. So like, I think it's just Agnes and Sherman deserves it and everything else. I think sometimes these other out of town restaurants and stuff, the PR machine gets to work. And then that's kind of where you lose me sometimes, but that's just me. It's a personal opinion. I think all four of these are good restaurants. So could others have been on this list? Yes, perhaps, but I don't think it's a bad glimpse.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you. I mean, I think, you know, you mentioned, you know, writers having relationships with chefs, and certainly Paula Forbes, who's the food writer, food critic for Texas Monthly. When you talk about prior relationships, Latuli, Brian Caswell,
sure.
You know, Paul has been covering his work for a long time. Zaranda, Hugo Ortega, obviously that's another restaurant that, you know, would be on Texas Monthly's radar. James Beard Award winner, a successful track record of restaurants in Houston. D and Pho is the kind of the weird one, right? I mean,
that's a sleeper for me.
You know, it's out in Chinatown, like the Western Edge. It did get a good review in the Chronicle from Bao. That was kind of how I got became aware of it. I, you know, as you may recall, it was on my winning team in the Vietnamese restaurant draft that we did a few months ago. It was my Pho pick. So,
and I like that there are picks outside of the main stuff. You and I live in a bubble so much of stuff inside the loop. So it is nice to see something in Chinatown represented.
Yeah, no. I think it's to Texas Monthly's credit that they got outside of the usual names, the usual places, and went to this place and liked it enough to include it on the list. I mean, I think what Deanne Pho is doing is really tasty. I've only been the one time, but I would be very happy to go back there really at any point. And I will say that on my one visit, you know, a random Saturday afternoon, it was rocking and rolling with just about, you know, every table full and a really delicious bowl of noodle soup. So that I'm all fine with. I think Latuli and Zaranda are good picks too. I mean, we've said a lot about Agnes and Sherman. Obviously, this has been very much a media darling, basically since it opened, you know, on the Chronicle's Best New Restaurant list, recognized by the New York Times, Michelin recommended. You know, the hits just really keep on coming for Agnes and Sherman. So it's not surprising to see it on the Texas Monthly list. The one that's kind of a, like, The only one that I really would have liked to see, obviously, is Camaraderie, which we've also talked about quite a bit. And then looking at the list, there was another kind of French influence spot with a prefix menu in San Antonio. And I feel like when you're only doing 10 restaurants for a state as big as Texas, you really only get one of those. And so I'm sure Paula went to Camaraderie, and I'm sure she liked that other restaurant in San Antonio just a little bit better. But, you know, a strong showing for Houston on the Texas Monthly list. And worth noting, this is the first time that Paula has done this list since she took over for Pat Sharp in 2025. So, you know, again, you know, we talked about the Chronicle Top 100 and making AGA's the number one restaurant in Houston, kind of that, you know, there's a new sheriff in town. You gotta get people's attention. Putting a restaurant like Dian Pho on the list alongside Mamani, which is the restaurant in Dallas that got a Michelin star when it had only been open for a couple of months. Latuli, Agnes and Sherman, those are the kind of restaurants we expect to see on a list like this. Mixing it up a little bit with both Dian Pho and Bonfire, this restaurant that's all the way up in Paris, Texas, by the Oklahoma City border, or the Oklahoma border, excuse me. That's what you want. That's how you show that there's a new perspective and different kinds of restaurants are going to be eligible for a list like this. So I think that's all to the good.
I agree. I think there's not, you know, there's only a handful of restaurants. I think the fact that Houston got four is pretty well allocated.
Yes. Yes. We win. Sorry, Austin and Dallas, take a seat. Houston's still the best food city in Texas.
100%.
All right. Let's move on to topic number two, a little shuffling at the Texas Tower, the, high rise in downtown. Baltimore-based Atlas Restaurant Group has taken over the Sylvie, the European-inspired all-day cafe that was originally opened by Berg Hospitality. In addition, they are opening Cannon, an upscale Japanese restaurant with a robotic grill. If the name Atlas Restaurant Group sounds familiar, it's because they also operate Lock Bar and Azumi in River Oaks District, as well as Marmo, the Italian Steakhouse, and the Montrose Collective. Mary, what do you think? What do you make of Atlas Restaurant Group coming into the Texas Tower, and what do you think about an upscale sushi restaurant for downtown?
I think it's opportunistic in a good way. I mean, Atlas isn't batting 100% in Houston, but they're batting pretty strong. River Oaks District, they reconcepted one of their restaurants into a sushi spot, so it's not their first go at sushi in Houston. And, you know, downtown, especially with, I don't know their time horizon of when they're going to open this, but
later this year, towards the end of this year.
We have so much coming to Houston with World Cup and everything else. And I do think World Cup is helping downtown get rejuvenated in a lot of ways, especially the Main Street corridor. But, you know, office workers are slowly, you know, returning back to downtown. And I think the more concentration of people downtown, the more opportunities you have to capture business spending and convention center business, et cetera. So I think these guys know what they're doing in terms of operating large scale, successful restaurants. And I think this is a good fit for them.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. I think Azumi has been a very welcome and successful addition to River Oaks District. You know, it replaced Uzo Bay, which was that seafood restaurant that I guess maybe only in comparison to Lock Bar, but just never quite caught on with the same level of enthusiasm. And I think that's been a pleasant surprise in some ways. It's like, oh, what do the Lock Bar guys know about sushi? Well, actually, they have a guy who worked for Nobu for a long time and is really talented, and so he knows that stuff and can train a team and execute at a high level, and so that's been welcome. And, you know, I was thinking about kind of what the sushi options are in downtown. Obviously, there's Kokoro at Bravery Chef Hall, but that's a very casual experience, even though it's a quality experience. So having that, as you said, for those business lunches, for happy hour, for, you know, a nice dinner before a show in the theater district, you know, the Texas Tower is very close to, you know, the Wortham and Jones Hall and places like that. So I think that's all to the good. And I messaged Alex Smith, who's the founder of Atlas Restaurant Group. And I said, you know, how is this different from Azumi? And he said, similar menu with like a different feel. So if you like Azumi, this is good news. And if you like kind of upscale sushi places, you know, this is a new spot to try. So that's coming later this year. In terms of the Sylvie, you know, I know people like it for breakfast, lunch, happy hour. I don't really expect very much about it to change. I doubt they even really changed the staff very much. It's just kind of a neighborhood resource, kind of a weekday craving. And I think that'll just keep rolling along. It's, you know, it's an amenity for all the people that work in that building.
Yeah, I think for me, any sushi concept that seems to, like, we see so many sushi concepts come into Houston and all of them seem to do pretty well. And we're going to talk about another one in a second here on the show. And it's like, yeah, when in doubt, Houston loves some sushi.
Absolutely. All right. And speaking of topic number three, Handy's Dozo has signed on to Central Park Post Oak. This is the new 17-acre mixed-use development, kind of in between like where the Annie is and where Caracol and King Steak are. They've already announced three other restaurants. The Henry, which is the neighborhood restaurant from Fox Restaurant Concepts. It's already open in the Town and Country area. Buck and Ryder, a seafood restaurant that's also from Arizona. And then Sparrow Italia, an Italian steakhouse from the same ownership group as Toca Madera. So Handy's now is going to be the only locally owned restaurant in this development, at least so far. And obviously much more casual. This is, I mean, we know Handy's. It's affordable, it's quick, it's casual. I don't know what they do to the nori to get it that crispy, but it does make their hand rolls like just a little better than like almost everybody else's.
Yeah, no, I've always liked their concept. I think they will do well here. And again, Houston loves them some sushi. So Post Oak is prime opportunity for them.
Yeah. And then, you know, the only thing I was thinking about is it's a little bit of a crowded sushi marketplace in that Post Oak corridor. Well, Uchiko number one, obviously, but also Nobu in the Galleria, Sushi on Post Oak, kind of a neighborhoody sushi bar from the owners of Bluefish in Midtown.
I heard that Nobu Houston is the worst performing one on the entire group. So, I mean, yes, we should mention it, but no, do I think it's a draw for at least Houstonians.
Well, yeah, I don't know that to be true. I'm sort of reluctant to spread rumors like that without like some sort of confirmation. I feel like this is going to get me an email from their PR team.
This is from a Nobu employee friend of mine, but whatever, you know.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I will say it is my opinion that Nobu is not a compelling sushi restaurant, and that I...
No, it should be. I want it to be. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
It's beautiful, and I just can't get in. Like, I would infinitely... I went to Uchiko last year for dinner with my family, and we had a great time, and I was like, oh, yeah, I should eat here more often, you know? Like, this is really good. And then even, like, on a more casual note, like, Balboa has a basic selection of nigiri and sushi rolls. Like if you just want to like a little taste of sushi, like you can do that. You know, even Mastro's has a little bit of sushi if you want to kind of mix it up with a steak vibe, you know, but again, none of those are as affordable as Handy's Dozo. I mean, the only one that kind of comes close is Sushi on Post Oak, which is just like an old school neighborhoody, like get your like over the top rolls, get a little sake, get a couple of acai's. Like just a fun sushi hang, you know, and mm-hmm. and I think that's been like if you live in that area, it's kind of like an easy go to. So maybe they'll compete a little bit, but I think there's room for everybody just because it's such a popular tourist destination, and I think you know sushi, as you said, is so popular.
I agree.
All right, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around. Mary, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk to you about Bar Solo. This is the Mexico City-inspired dining bar with food and cocktails. It is located on Lower Westheimer in what had been a dumpling restaurant. And then after that was a Thai restaurant, Sala Thai. Notably, it is basically across the street from your former restaurant, Avondale Food and Wine. So this is a neighborhood you know well.
Indeed.
I also wanted to talk to you about this because you're a fairly frequent Mexico City visitor. So pick it up wherever you want. Like talk about this as a fit for Montrose. Talk about it as a how faithfully it kind of captures that Mexico City experience that they're going for. Go wherever you want.
Go freestyle for Mary. I think that there's so many trends that new restaurants are trying to tap into, and this restaurant certainly fits into that. I mean, I hate to use the word vibe dining, but, you know, not in a necessarily a bad way, but it's, this is a hip little spot. So, you know, it's not super big, so it doesn't have to be 100% full to feel like it's got good energy. In general, I like smaller restaurants. I like smaller. I don't like these huge restaurants for me personally, but just personal opinion. I thought the cocktails were really good as a whole. You know, it's a little loud in there. They're playing the music loud, and that's fine. Like, that's what you would expect at a spot like this. It's in the lower Westheimer Quarter as you're approaching Midtown. So it's not in the heart of Montrose. You're definitely seeking this out. You're not stumbling by it like you would maybe at Montrose and Westheimer, per se, like where Montrose Collective is. But I think it's going to be very popular for a while. I mean, everybody likes new spots, Mexico City style spots. You know, always start off with a lot of hype in Houston, it seems. And, you know, there were some really good food items on the menu. To be 100% fair to them, we went in the very first few days. So
yeah, we went on like the second day of their soft opening.
Yeah. So I don't want to be too critical of the food because I don't think that's fair that early in. But, you know, there was one dish that really missed for me, and that was a scallop dish. It was too warm in temperature, and it didn't set with me. A lot of the other dishes were very good. It's not an inexpensive restaurant, but then again, dining out right now is not an inexpensive proposition most of the time in Houston. So it's going to get a lot of traction for people that are looking for a new hip, fun place to go in Montrose or inside the Loop. And this checks that box.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a veteran crew that's kind of behind this. I mean, you know, Angel Bautista, the head bartender, you know, he's worked at Hugo's, he's worked at Blue Door, and he worked at Mad. He's been with Sambers Hospitality. He kind of drove the bar program at Andiron. You know, Javier Becerra was with the BCN group for a long time.
One of our favorite restaurants, and they definitely know what's up with drinks.
Yeah. And he was at DeGuste after Brandon. He was Brandon Silva's, one of Brandon Silva's sous chefs. And then when Brandon left, he and Rico Mackins ran the kitchen there for a while and, you know, got in, I want to say, either the Esquire Best New Restaurant list or the GQ Best New Restaurant list, like one of those magazines, kind of went to DeGuste during Javier's time there and really liked it. So a lot of good experience running the bar program, running the kitchen. But as you said, we caught it on day two and we kind of had a mixed experience, which I think is fair. I mean, I think like we wanted a martini and they were like, oh, they're not batched yet. They're not made yet. It's like, I don't know. How do you have a section of your menu devoted to martinis and the martinis aren't ready yet?
Or put an opening menu saying soon to come or whatever. Just edit your menu. It's easy to self-print. That's an easy fix.
Right. But again, like the Japalomo with the, you know, the Japanese whiskey and the Yuzu Koshu. I mean, we had one of those. I thought it was really delicious. We had a couple other drinks like the gin and tonic, I think. Beautiful to look at with the clear ice. Really tasty. I mean, that's like, if you're going to charge me $18 for a cocktail, it needs to be beautiful to look at and it needs to be delicious. And they did that. And in terms of the food, I mean, there was stuff that we really liked. There were two different octopus dishes, one that was kind of a, like an octopus sausage. And then one that was just like seared octopus. Both of those I'd get again. You know, we had a Campachi crudo that I really liked. In terms of what missed, either one of us can rant about the two warm scallops on the tostada. That was just like a really unappealing, you know, if I'm going to eat a raw dish, I want the raw items to be cold. It makes me nervous when they're not. And then that steak taco, which was pretty tasty, but like poorly constructed, overloaded with these like kind of salty potato sticks. You couldn't really bite it, eat it without like spilling, spilling these potato sticks all over the place. And then the pricing, I mean, you know, we ordered heavy. We wanted to try a bunch of stuff. But when it was all said and done, it was $300 for the two of us. And that's just a lot of money for a pretty casual meal that, like, what didn't really feel like
dinner, cocktails, you know? Cocktails, no wine, right?
Right. Like, right. A couple of cocktails each, like, you know,
yeah.
Some food, but by the time it was all said and done, tax and tip, $300, like, just, it felt a little bit spendy. And I know that, you know, I know that a lot of restaurants, this is what it costs to dine out now. But I would have liked this restaurant a lot more if we had spent $200 instead of three. Because at three, it's just like, we could go anywhere.
No, at three, we're going to BCN. And that's like, I hate to say it, but that's a fair comparison. Like, am I eating everything at BCN with you for $300? No. But are we having a couple of rounds of cocktails, a couple of appetizers, one, two entrees, and some wine? Yes. And it's BCN. So that's my only thing here. This is a cool spot, but the price is a little high for what it's doing. And I just think the way that you and I go out and we see so many spots, it's like, we have to think about, does this deliver value for whatever price point it is, whether that's $100, $200, $300 for two. So people can understand, like, all right, it's an anniversary or it's your birthday. Like, is this worth the splurge? Because for me at $300, that's not an everyday type of, right?
No, it's not. I mean, of course it's not. It's not for most people. Could we have ordered a couple of fewer dishes? Like, maybe, but that would have knocked another $50-$60 off the bill. But still, like, to be over $200 for, again, just like a kind of a fancy happy hour, like not even really enough food to feel like a meal. Style. Yeah, like a tapas style light dinner with a couple of drinks each just felt a little bit. It doesn't feel like a value.
I think a comparison of type of restaurant, maybe not the vibe of it, but Barcelona, right? Restaurant on Westheimer, which is a wine bar, cocktails, and a predominantly tapas style menu. I think you would be at half the price or less than this for a similar quantity food and cocktail type of experience. So is this worth twice the price? I'm not sure.
Yeah, not yet. But again, like, I really do want to go back because I kind of want to see them. I want to see them round into form. I want to see how that menu evolves, you know, and then it's like little things, right? Like those ice cubes were beautiful, but they came all the way up to the edge of the glass. So it's almost a little hard to drink because the ice cube gets in the way, right?
Yeah, it was in a highball glass. So it's long, rectangular, you know, like, it's aesthetically beautiful, functionally, maybe not great.
Right. Functionally make it like a quarter inch shorter so it doesn't bump into my teeth when I sip from the glass. That's all.
Correct.
And then I know you want to tee off on their valets, so go ahead.
No, I mean, it's, thank God. I love that sometimes when you and I do the show, it's been
like
days,
a couple
weeks.
Of weeks. Yeah.
So I'm not as hot. I was hot that night. Listen, Houston is a driving town. We all get that. Montrose is a difficult neighborhood to park in, even on its best days. They do have valet here. There was no signage. Also, day two. So maybe they have some signage now. I can't remember what it was, $7, $8, $9. But they have limited parking up front, and I understand that. They have an offsite parking lot down the street across the block. But for me, if I'm going to valet my car, I probably wanted an eye distance, or I at least want you to tell me you're going to take it across the street. I assumed they were going to park it up front. And because it was across the street, down the street, it took quite some time to get a car.
It took between 5 and 10 minutes for your car to show up, which is annoying when you could have walked to it in less time.
Yeah. And there was nobody in line in front of us really for valet. So it's like, man, I'd hate to see 5, 6, 7, 8 people try to get their car at the same time. So my suggestion would be for most people to this restaurant, Uber. Uber or know what you're getting into and park down the block on yourself on a side street. Yes, it's a busy part of town, but you know what you're getting into if you're going out in Montrose.
So yeah, I think we caught them early. You know, they still didn't have their right furniture in. Obviously, the kitchen is still getting things a little dialed in, but I do feel like there's going to be a lot of hype about this place because it's so pretty, because it's so intimate, because of the pedigree of the two guys who are behind it. And so I do think that, like, when we have these kind of mixed bag experiences, it's incumbent on us to share that and kind of help set people's expectations. Like, know that you're getting into a place that's still finding its footing and that's frankly just going to be like a pretty expensive experience if you really indulge yourself. So, you know, I think we will go back because ultimately I like ambitious bars and ambitious restaurants, and these guys have enough of a pedigree that I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt and think that it will get better over time. But were we going back right away? Like, no.
I'm treating it like a bar with a couple of small bites for now.
Yeah, we're not going to do another meal there for a minute, I think.
Agreed.
All right, Mary, I'm going to say that does it for our restaurant of the week. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guest will be Paul Miller from Great Plate Hospitality.